The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of The Singing Bone features fratricide, the violent death of a child, and execution. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Brentano peered around the trunk of a large oak tree. His target was in sight. The boar had to be at least three times his size. Its brown fur was matted with blood, and he could see a few specks of red on its enormous white tusks. He looked at the black spear that the dwarf had given him. It was made of polished oak. The tip was black iron, and two small rubies were set into the spearhead. It may have been well-crafted, but it was barely longer than his forearm. How could he possibly kill the boar with something so small? Brentano never had very good aim. His brother Heinrich was the athlete in the family. Whenever the two of them went hunting together, Brentano considered himself lucky if he caught anything at all. Meanwhile, Heinrich usually returned home with enough game to feed them for a week. Brentano ran his fingers over the jewels set into the end of the spear. Maybe he should just sell them. He could live a long and happy life, never thinking about killing the boar or the king's promise that came with it. As soon as Brentano had the thought, an image came into his head. It was the face of the little boy he had found in the forest. The boar had run him through and left him to die. When Brentano had found him, the child's lips were twisted in a hideous scream. He gripped the spear tightly. As he stepped out from behind the tree, the boar turned to look at him. It pawed the ground with one of its gargantuan hooves. Then it charged. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Today, we'll be sharing the tale of The Singing Bone. The story begins with a king who promises his daughter to anyone who can kill the vicious boar rampaging through his kingdom. The Singing Bone ends in murder, tragedy, and betrayal. The version that we're telling today was published by Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm in the 1819 edition of their classic anthology, Children's and Household Tales. Though some Grimm's tales may have been inventions of contemporary storytellers, others, like The Singing Bone, have evolved over a long period of time. Folklorist Graham Anderson has tied The Singing Bone's origins to one of the tales in an epic poem titled Metamorphoses. Metamorphoses was written by the poet Ovid sometime between 3 and 8 CE. Included in its 250 separate episodes is a story called The Caledonian Boar Hunt. Like The Singing Bone, The Caledonian Boar Hunt centers around a king who promises a reward to anyone who can kill the boar that's ravaging his land. Though the basic plot structure may have originated with this ancient Roman legend, once the story reached European shores, it quickly changed. It adapted to the varying cultures of medieval Europe and Scandinavia. Many versions do away with the boar hunt altogether. In a Spanish version of the tale, the goal is to find a special blue lily, while an Italian variation has the protagonists looking for the feather of a griffin. In Scotland, the format of the story was changed from that of a folk tale to a traditional folk ballad titled The Twa Sisters. By the time the ballad had made its way to Norway and Sweden, it was almost unrecognizable. folklorists are only able to trace it back to the original singing bone narrative because it maintains one of the more unique elements found in that story, a musical instrument made from a murder victim's corpse. The tale's migration across Europe and even eventually to the Americas speaks to its universal appeal. Perhaps the macabre subject matter of the singing bone helped its listeners deal with the repressed emotions that are central to the story. Envy, greed, and violent rage are feelings we can all relate to. Those who can't work through these feelings might lead violent and difficult lives. As we'll see in today's tale, they can come to violent ends as well. Heinrich sat at the end of a wooden table in a corner of the tavern. His arms were crossed, and he had a deep scowl etched into his face. At the other end of the table sat his younger brother. Brentano was surrounded by friends and acquaintances. He was telling the story of how he'd found the boy in the woods for what felt like the 1,000th time. People were always eager to hear any bit of news about the wild boar. It had been running rampant in the kingdom for months now. Everyone had a story of it destroying crops or eating livestock, but the boy that Brentano had found in the woods was the first human that it had killed. Just as Brentano was coming to the end of his tale, Hans the butcher's boy hurried up to the table. One of the men called for the story to be told again, but Brentano shook his head. "I don't think I'd feel right telling it again. It doesn't feel respectful to talk about it so much." Heinrich rolled his eyes. His brother just loved pretending to be modest and upright. If it truly didn't feel right, why had he told the story twice already? Heinrich was about to say just that when Hans interrupted him. He announced that he hadn't come to hear the story of the body in the woods at all. He had news. King Philip had heard about the killing and decided that enough was enough. He was offering a reward to whoever could bring him the boar's carcass. Someone asked what the reward was. Hans leaned in close and said, "That's the best part. Whoever kills the boar will be married to the princess Malchen." Heinrich's heart leapt as the table erupted into excited chatter. Most of the townsfolk had only heard of the king's youngest daughter and her legendary beauty, but Heinrich had actually seen her up close. It had happened one day as he was hunting with his brother. They set a few fox traps, and Brentano, being the dunce that he was, had fallen into one of them. Heinrich heard his brother crying out, but hadn't gone back to help him until he heard a woman's voice as well. The princess had been riding through the woods when she heard Brentano's cries and stopped to assist him. When he arrived, Princess Malchen and his brother were happily chatting away as though they were old friends. Heinrich had never seen anyone so beautiful. She had long auburn hair that fell down her back in shining ripples. Her eyes were wide and innocent, and her lips were parted in a perfect pink Cupid's bow. On the way home, Brentano wouldn't stop prattling on about how kind and thoughtful she'd been. Heinrich couldn't believe that his idiot brother had been the one to speak with the princess, while he hadn't done much more than wave dumbly while she rode away. Now he would have a chance to do more than just meet the princess. He would be able to marry her. Heinrich stood up and announced that he would be the one to kill the boar. The table went quiet as everyone turned to look at him. One of his friends asked how he planned to kill such a vicious beast. Before Heinrich could respond, his brother clapped him on the shoulder and said, "He will kill it with my help." Heinrich brushed his brother's hand off his shoulder and said that he doubted he would need his help. After all, Brentano wasn't exactly known for his hunting skills. Brentano turned red at this. He said he knew he wasn't a good hunter, but at least he could help his brother track the beast. Heinrich looked his brother up and down. He had the charmless, ruddy face of a peasant. Brentano was so guileless and unsophisticated that people had a hard time believing they were related at all, let alone brothers. He told Bertano to go ahead and look for the boar. He'd join him shortly. As soon as his brother left, Heinrich turned to his friends and said, "If he can manage to give the boar so much as a twisted ankle, I'll buy a round for everyone here." The crowd laughed heartily at that. Heinrich took another sip of his ale. The boar wouldn't get far in the next few hours, and he'd need a little liquid courage before he attempted to kill it. Brutano had been wandering the woods in search of the boar for hours. So far, he had ripped his trousers, dropped several of his arrows into a creek, and stubbed his toe. On top of all that, he had yet to see the slightest trace of the boar. He wanted to do what he could to help the kingdom, but maybe he wasn't capable of helping. Perhaps he was just as useless and stupid as Heinrich had always said. Then there was the princess. She'd been so kind and sweet when they met in the forest, but surely Princess Malchen would be repulsed at the idea of marrying him. As Bertano turned back toward home, he spotted something strange at the end of the path. At first, he thought it was a rabbit or some other small animal, but as he looked closer, he realized that it was actually a tiny man with a long white beard. Bertano gave a yelp of fear and jumped behind a tree. The little man at the end of the path laughed and said,
"Come out, Bertano. I won't hurt you. I've come to help."
Bertano stepped tentatively out from behind the tree. He approached the little man and saw that he was dressed in a mossy green tunic and was holding a black spear. Bertano had heard stories of the dwarves and sprites who lived in the forest, but he'd never seen one up close. The white of the dwarf's hair and beard was so bright that it was almost glowing. Bertano had to resist the urge to reach out and touch it. The dwarf smiled kindly up at him and said,
"Bertano, both you and your brother have determined to kill the boar. His reasons are selfish, while yours are pure and simple. That's why I've come to you with a gift."
The little man held out the spear. Bertano took it tentatively. The dwarf explained that the spear was magic, and with it, Bertano could face the boar unafraid. Bertano took the spear and looked skeptically at the little man. He wanted to ask a million questions, but before he could, the dwarf took his hand, looked him in the eye, and said,
"Your destiny is knocking, Bertano. Do not deny it."
With that, the little man disappeared before his very eyes. Next, Bertano comes face to face with the monstrous beast. Now, back to the story. Bertano rubbed his eyes and looked again at the place where the dwarf had been standing. If it weren't for the spear that he now held in his hand, he might have thought he'd imagined the whole encounter. The dwarf said that with this spear, he could face the boar unafraid. It certainly didn't seem like enough to take down the monstrous animal that had been terrorizing the whole kingdom. For a moment, Bertano pictured the princess who'd been promised to the monster's killer. He wondered if she'd be impressed that he'd managed to do it with such a small weapon. He shook his head. None of this even mattered if he couldn't track the beast down. Just then, Bertano heard a sound coming from an oak grove a few yards down the path. It was the agonized squeal of an animal in pain. Bertano's heart began to pound. As he stepped closer, he could hear a snuffling, grunting noise. He pulled aside one of the tree branches as quietly as he could, and his eyes widened in terror. Standing in the center of the clearing was an enormous boar, its razor-sharp tusks dripping with the blood of the fox it had just killed. The sight of it sent a shiver up Bretano's spine. For a moment, he thought of running away, forgetting about the monster and never thinking of the princess again. He shook off the thought. Bertano knew he couldn't let the boar go on, not with the chance that it might take another life. Bertano took a deep breath and stepped out from behind the trees. The gigantic swine looked up from his gruesome meal. It fixed its eyes on Brentano and let out a deep, snorting growl that made his hair stand on end. The beast pawed the ground, bristling with anticipation. Brentano raised the spear, but before he could aim it, the boar was launching itself toward him. The animal collided with him, knocking them both to the ground. Brentano shoved the spear into his chest. It slid into the flesh with a wet, squelching sound. A fountain of hot blood spurted out from the wound and all over Brentano's tunic. For a terrifying moment, Brentano felt himself pinned under the boar, its massive teeth gnashing inches from his face. Then its yellow eyes dimmed. There was a fresh spurt of blood, and the monstrous pig was still. With great effort, Brentano managed to slide out from under the enormous beast. He was muddy and covered in blood, but aside from that, he was unscathed. He looked down at the boar. He couldn't believe he had actually killed it. The kingdom was finally free of the menacing beast. Not only that, but now he was entitled to the princess's hand in marriage. Brentano wondered if the princess would want to marry him. She had been awfully kind when they had met in the woods. He shook his head. He supposed he would cross that bridge when he came to it, for now he had to focus on getting the carcass home. Back at the tavern, Heinrich lurched up from the table. He'd only intended on having one or two steins of ale before heading out to kill the boar. Somehow, two drinks had turned into three, and three into 12. Now the room was spinning as he made his way toward the door. The boar hunt would have to wait until tomorrow. Heinrich staggered over to a little bridge. He spotted his brother coming from the other direction. Brentano grunted as he pulled a heavy wheelbarrow overflowing with wiry, dark fur. Heinrich stumbled toward him. They met in the middle of the bridge. Brentano said something about a small man giving him a spear, but Heinrich was having trouble focusing on his words. His gaze was fixed on the animal in the wheelbarrow. Through the haze, he heard Brentano say, "I can't believe I was the one to kill it." Heinrich felt a wave of nausea overwhelm him. He clutched the railing of the bridge and threw up into the river below. Heinrich wiped his lips, and Brentano looked at him with concern. He asked Heinrich if he was feeling all right. Heinrich was not all right. His younger brother wasn't handsome or strong or even smart enough to know that his brother hated him. This useless slug of a man was going to marry the princess, and now he was acting as though he were the one in charge. Heinrich gave his brother a sneering smile and said, "Oh, I'm fine. I'm just so proud of you." Brentano sighed in relief. He began to babble about the princess, but Heinrich wasn't listening. He was looking down at the stone beer stein in his hand. It was quite heavy. Heinrich asked Brentano if he'd mind helping him home. His younger brother gave him a loving smile. He told Heinrich he'd planned on going to the tavern to celebrate, but he'd be happy to take his big brother home instead. Heinrich felt his simmering rage coming to a boil. His brother always had to make it look like he was so heroic, killing the boar, sacrificing his celebration. Brentano just wanted to make him look like a villain. Fine then, he would show his brother what a villain really was. As Brentano turned towards home, Heinrich lifted the beer stein and brought it crashing down on his head. Brentano turned around and looked at his brother with hurt and confusion. Heinrich hit him again, this time so hard that the stein broke in two. Brentano crumpled to the ground, but Heinrich did not stop. In his frenzy, he picked up one of the pieces and continued hitting Brentano over and over again. He didn't stop until his brother's face was a bloody mess of ruined flesh and shards of skull. Heinrich looked down at what he had done. What had come over him? It was like someone else had taken over his body. It wasn't his fault, was it? It was his brother's doing. He had goaded him into such a rage. Heinrich's head was still reeling, but the shock of what he'd done was sobering him up quickly. He needed to conceal the crime before anyone in the village saw what he had done. He looked around. An old shovel leaned against the bridge. Heinrich grabbed it. Then he heaved his brother's body off the bridge and into the shallow brook below. Heinrich sat the body up against some rocks. His heart raced as he dug a hole in the bottom of the creek bed. Once the hole was deep enough, he dragged over a log to temporarily hold back the flow of water. He arranged his brother's body in the hole and filled it back in with earth. This was the perfect place to conceal a body. The water running over the grave would keep animals away and keep humans from seeing that the earth had been disturbed. Heinrich went back to the bridge where his brother had left the wheelbarrow. He looked over the bloodied animal corpse. It was much larger than he had expected it would be. Heinrich wondered if he would have been able to kill it after all. The fact that his idiot brother had managed it was nothing short of a miracle. He picked up the wheelbarrow and hauled it to the tavern. He swung open the door, and all eyes turned toward him. Heinrich gave the crowd a moment to take in his muddy clothes and blood-covered face before declaring in a triumphant voice, "Well, fellows, pour me another drink. I've got a marriage to celebrate." Years passed. Rudolph the shepherd wiped a bead of sweat from his forehead as he urged his sheep through the empty riverbed. He was hoping to find something, anything, for his flock to graze on. In his 12 short years on this earth, Rudolph had never seen such a dry season. As he made his way down the riverbed, he noticed the remains of an old tavern and a decaying bridge off in the distance. Once he reached it, Rudolph sat down to rest in the shadow of the bridge. The tavern looked like it had burned down years ago. He thought he remembered his father telling him something about a tavern fire in this part of the country. It was around the time Prince Heinrich confronted a monstrous swine that was terrorizing the countryside. Rudolph always loved that story, the tale of the valiant Prince Heinrich and his poor, simple brother Brentano. The swine had gobbled up Brentano, and his brother Heinrich had avenged his death by killing the beast with a single blow. Then he had married the beautiful Princess Malchen and lived happily ever after. As Rudolph sat under the shadow of the old bridge, he began to draw in the sand of the dry riverbed. As he ran his fingers through it, Rudolph felt the touch of something smooth and cold in the hot sand. He picked it up and examined it. It was a small, round bone, about an inch wide. It looked like one of the bones you might see in an animal's neck, but it was too small to belong to a cow and too large to belong to a sheep. Rudolph smiled to himself. Whatever it was, it would make a perfect mouthpiece for his horn. The wooden mouthpiece Rudolph had been using was cracking badly. He'd been looking for weeks for something to replace it. Rudolph pulled the horn out of his pack. To his surprise, the bone fit onto it perfectly. He'd thought he might have needed to sand it down, but it almost seemed like the little bone had been made to fit the horn. Rudolph put the instrument to his lips and began to play. He quickly became engrossed in the music. He felt almost as if he weren't the one playing at all. It was like the horn was controlling him. Then, to Rudolph's astonishment, the sound turned into a high-pitched voice. The voice was singing.
Young shepherd, you are blowing on my little bone. My brother killed me and buried me beneath the bridge to get the wild boar for the daughter of the king.
As soon as the song was finished, the shepherd threw the horn down on the sand. His heart was pounding. What had he just heard? He tried to tell himself that he'd imagined it, but it had felt so real. He tentatively picked up the horn and examined the little bone. His heart seemed to drop into his stomach. This wasn't an animal bone at all. It was human. Coming up, Heinrich discovers that some secrets refuse to stay buried. Now, back to the story. Heinrich married the Princess Malchen after slaying the boar that was terrorizing the kingdom, but none knew that it was actually his brother Brentano who had slain the boar. Heinrich killed him and took credit for his achievement. Now, a young shepherd had unearthed Brentano's bones and learned the truth. The Princess Malchen shifted uncomfortably in her ornately carved oak chair. Today was the day her family gathered in the throne room to hear the disputes between her father's various lords and chancellors. It was the most time she would spend in a room with her husband all month. They'd been married for 6 years now, and what a dreadful 6 years it had been. She'd never liked her father's plan to have her married off as a prize to whoever could kill a wild boar, but she'd gone along with it because it was her duty. Besides that, she'd reasoned that any man who could subdue such an enormous beast must be incredibly brave, strong-willed, and devoted to his country. When she had first met the man who had managed it, she was pleased to find that he was handsome, too. Heinrich had introduced himself and immediately asked if she remembered meeting him in the woods. Malchen told him that she didn't really remember him, but she recalled being very fond of his brother. At that, Heinrich gave her a sour look and told her that his brother had been eaten by the boar. That was the beginning of their relationship, and things had only gone downhill from there. 6 years later, the couple despised each other so much that they didn't even take their meals together anymore. Heinrich spent most of his time at the town alehouse. Malchen knew that there was a brothel nearby, and she imagined that he did more than just drink during his long nights away from the castle. From time to time, she found herself thinking about Heinrich's brother, the one who'd been eaten by the monstrous boar. Though she had no recollection of meeting Heinrich that day in the woods, her memory of his brother was crystal clear. She remembered how kind he had been, how she got down from her horse to help him out of the hole he'd fallen into, and he'd apologized for inconveniencing her. She found herself wishing that he had been the one to kill the boar, rather than his vain and thoughtless brother. The hours passed agonizingly slowly as one by one the lords filtered in with their complaints and demands. By the time the last one was announced, Malchen's eyelids were growing heavy. But she was roused from her stupor when a young boy was led into the room by several armed guards. This was interesting. You didn't often see young peasant boys in the throne room. The guard who had brought him in cleared his throat.
If it pleases your majesty, this young lad has a marvelous trick. He's been begging for weeks to show it to you, and I thought you might enjoy hearing it at the end of a long day.
Malchen's father smiled. He told the guards to let the boy forward. The boy took a few tentative steps toward the king. He looked like he couldn't be more than 12 years old. Malchen could tell that he was quite intimidated by her father. The boy took a small, round horn from behind his back. He gave a low bow and told the king he'd come across a mouthpiece in the riverbed that gave his horn the power to sing. Heinrich gave a hearty snort at this.
A horn that can sing? You must be mad, boy. Get out of here before we have you used for target practice.
The king, who was not fond of Prince Heinrich either, gave him a disdainful look.
He spoke kindly to the now trembling boy and told him to go ahead and play. The young man put the horn to his lips and began. The tune that came out of it was a sad, haunting melody. Malchin had never heard anything quite like it. After a few moments, she found that tears were streaming down her face. As the playing continued, she noticed that the horn did indeed seem to have taken on a life of its own. The boy's hands weren't even touching it anymore. It hovered near his lips. But from what Malchin could tell, he wasn't blowing on it at all. Gradually, the sound of the horn changed into a high, sharp voice. It sang out,
"Young shepherd, you are blowing on my little bone. My brother killed me and buried me to get the wild boar for the daughter of the king."
When it was finished, the horn fell to the floor with a clatter. For a moment, an unforgettable silence hung over the court. Then everyone began to speak all at once. Heinrich had stood up. He called the boy a liar and yelled for someone to have him arrested. Her father turned red in the face and asked what the meaning of this was. The boy burst into sobs. Malchin stood up and called for silence. As the noise died down, she beckoned the boy forward. He dried his tears and stepped forward. Malchin asked him to show her the mouthpiece he'd found in the riverbed. He handed it to her, and she examined it. Malchin had read a few books on anatomy, and she knew a little bit about what the different bones looked like. This appeared to be a piece of a human neck bone. Malchin asked the boy if he could show her where he found it, and he nodded. Just then, Heinrich leapt to his feet again and shouted, "Can't you see this boy is spreading treasonous lies and trying to defame me? We should have him executed on the spot." Malchin gave her husband a look of contempt and told him that if they were indeed lies, he should have nothing to worry about. Heinrich sat down. Malchin was pleased to see that the look on his face was one of discomfort and fear. The next day, Malchin and the king followed the boy to a little bridge over a dry creek bed. It was next to the ruins of an old tavern that had burned down 6 years ago, the same year the boar was killed, Malchin noted. The king ordered his men to dig, and it wasn't long before they began to unearth a human skeleton. Once they collected all the pieces, they laid them out in the bright sunlight. It was easy to see how the man had died. Someone had bashed in his skull with such violence that half of it was shattered completely. The king pronounced his son-in-law's sentence on the spot: death. That evening, Malchin and the king stood on a bridge over the largest river in the kingdom. The executioner read out the charges and then turned to ask Heinrich if he had any last words. Heinrich looked down at the water rushing below him. He turned to Malchin and the king and said with a wicked smile, "I only wish I had buried him a little deeper." Malchin took a step back in revulsion. She'd known her husband was arrogant and vain, but she never would have guessed that he was a remorseless murderer. The executioner placed a canvas sack around Heinrich's head and sewed it shut around his neck. The executioner bound Heinrich's arms and legs and then picked him up and pushed him over the edge of the bridge. He hit the surface of the water with a tremendous splash. The assembled crowd watched as he flailed for a moment before sinking beneath the swiftly moving current. The next day, Malchin felt as if a tremendous weight had been lifted off of her shoulders. She and her father took the dead man's bones and laid them to rest in the cemetery, all except for the one neck bone. They allowed young Rudolph to keep it as a mouthpiece for his horn. It served him well for years, though it would never again play its sad song of murder and deceit. The fairy tale world that the Grimms created was a frightening place. Just like in the real world of 19th century Germany, the Grimms' world had illnesses, abusive husbands, and murderers. But unlike the real world, the fictional one is a place where the truth will always come out. In this realm, elements of nature work like a mystical tide, gradually bringing even deeply hidden truths to the surface. This is a theme we see over and over again in the Grimm's tales. There are stories like The Goose Girl, where lies are uncovered through the help of the wind and a horse's head, or ones like The Juniper Tree, where the magic comes from a bird and a tree. The story of the singing bone is no different. It's the sandy creek bed that offers up the dead brother's bone to the shepherd boy, and then another body of water that disposes of his murderer. The bone itself could be seen as an element of nature. After all, what could be more elemental than that part of ourselves that remains after everything else has decomposed? This recurring motif could be attributed to the fact that the Grimms were collecting their tales at the height of the German Romanticism movement of the 19th century. Romanticism saw nature as an expression of the spirit of the divine, and many of the Grimm's sources incorporated this sentiment into their tales. The singing bone was collected from a close friend of the Grimms named Dorchen Wild. Wild would later go on to marry Wilhelm Grimm, and many of her tales include a good deal of her own editorializing. Wild herself could certainly have had an influence on the tale, but on a deeper level, the idea that natural forces can bring the truth to light is one that has universal appeal. We all want to believe that we live in a world where justice will prevail. Even if we can't have a happy ending, we want to think that there are forces beyond our control, ensuring that the truth will become public. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back next week with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Nick Johnson, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Tales was written by Zoe Louisa Lewis, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.